The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's April the 10th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. In agricultural news for the day, pet foods oversight may be in the works on Capitol Hill. Brazil says its booming ethanol business upped the number of acres planted to sugarcane last year. And there is concern down on the farm about how the new climate change reports will impact future regulatory issues. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear from the statisticians in Illinois, Iowa, and Nebraska, the top three corn-growing states, about early spring conditions, updating the most recent USDA crop progress report. Speaking of USDA reports, we'll also recap this morning's WASDE numbers. Along the way, we'll hear a discussion I had last week with the executive director of the Illinois Beef Association about the proposed gross receipts tax. IBA, of course, opposes the measure. Just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, helping to create a storehouse of possibilities and products from a single seed. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Taking a look now at the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade as they settled on this Tuesday afternoon. Futures in the wheat pit at 457 and three quarters were up 10 and a quarter for the day. July futures at 474 were up a dozen even or 12. September contract at 483 up 9.5. May corn futures at 369, 5.5 higher. July futures up a nickel at 381 and a quarter. And December contract at 394.5 up 8 cents. May soybeans 742.5. They're off 6.5 today. July futures at 760.5 off 6. And November beans down 5.75 at 787.5. May bean meal futures at 204.80 down 4.60. May bean oil at 32.46 up 38. From the Mercantile Exchange, April feeder cattle at $110.95 a hundredweight, down 95 cents. April live cattle at $100.27.5. They were off 62.5. And the June futures there at 95.80 were down 90 cents. Crude oil futures are currently trading at $61.95 a barrel in the May contract. That's up 44 cents. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 12,578, and it's up just about 9 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This morning, the United States Department of Agriculture released the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, commonly referred to as the WASDE report, on the global stocks. It shows corn stocks on carryover for the 06-07 crop. That's the one that we harvested last fall at 91.82 million metric tons. That's up from 87.79 million metric tons last month. Beans at 61.02, up from 57.5 million metric tons in March. And wheat at 121.2, unchanged from last month. For the 06-07 carryover for the United States, corn now stands at 877 million bushels. That's up from 752 in March. Beans at 615, up from the March issue of 595. And wheat at 422 million, down from 472 in March. On the line with us this afternoon to talk a little bit about how the trade received those numbers and then moved on today is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
How'd trade make it through the morning?
Well, the trade is sort of wild and erratic this morning, Todd. The one thing that came out of the report that did basically hold steady was that wheat was considered positive for two reasons. Number one, the decrease in the carryout, and number two, the frost or freeze damage that we experienced, not to what degree we don't know yet. So that, and then, of course, the wheat did pull the corn up once, let it drop down to negative territory again once, and then brought it back and then fell off its highs late in the day. But the beans, it just confirmed we've got a lot of old beans, and we're not hurting for beans, at least until next year.
And that's where most of the action actually took place. The beans finished off 6.5 cents, or at least most of the negative action. By May, we're off 6.5. The deferred Novembers were down 5.75. But if you look out to the December corn futures, they managed an 8-cent gain. Was that just a technical run up there, or is there something else afoot with the December?
Well, I mean, as we look at the calendar, 90 million acres of corn. We've got to start planting sometime in April to get that in a timely fashion and keep our yield up, our trend line yields hanging in there, Todd. And the weather forecast for the rest of this week is rather wet. The maps changed a little bit at noon, and we're talking 1.5 to at least 1.5 inches of rain over the majority of the Corn Belt here this week, some places heavier. Some of the private weather forecasters called for the next week to be a tad wetter than like World Weather and a few of the others for the next week. If we're wet, very wet through the end of this week, get some more moisture into the next week, all of a sudden we're probably talking the 22nd to 25th of April to be starting planting this 90 million acre crop. And I think that has some people concerned.
And then she does really start to look fairly late for farmers, at least over the last decade, to get started in their corn planting rotation here in the Midwest.
That, and also, down through the Delta and the Kentucky area and like that, we're hearing talks of probably 20% of the corn that's in the ground and been up could have the growing point froze off. We're hearing of replanting going on in Kentucky today as we speak. We are hearing of a lot of the corn in the Delta that maybe is froze off, laid over, the growing point's still good, but yet it's going to be delayed or damaged some, hurt the yield a little bit for a lot of their corn that's in the ground and was up and was looking good. So, a little bit of damage problems, a little bit of questions out there, what's going on, and if we have to replant some, what quality seed is it? It's not going to be that good triple stack. It's going to go back in some of those areas.
Indeed. Wayne, we appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on Tuesday afternoons.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Well, at the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at the ag weather forecast. A winter storm watch, by the way, is in effect. I can't believe this, but it is for Joe Davies, Stevenson, Carroll, and Whiteside counties in northwestern Illinois from late tonight through Wednesday evening. Ed Keezer says tonight in northwestern Illinois, cloudy skies, some rain changing to snow after midnight in west central and southwestern Illinois. Cloudy with areas of light rain. Lows will be from 32 in northwestern Illinois to 45 in the south. Dave Dickey's here now with the Ag News.
In agricultural news, the chairman of the Senate Agriculture Subcommittee for Appropriations says he wants an oversight hearing on pet food. Wisconsin Democrat Herb Kuhl says he wants to examine a recent Food and Drug Administration recall of contaminated pet food. Kuhl wants the administration's view on whether it is necessary for the FDA to upgrade inspection of pet food facilities and regulations regarding pet products. One of the nation's largest chains of veterinary supplies yesterday estimated that as many as 39,000 cats and dogs were sickened or died from contaminated pet food. Six pet food companies have recalled products made with imported Chinese tainted wheat gluten. The Brazilian Census Bureau yesterday reported that Brazil's booming ethanol business and the fuel's growing international appeal prompted farmers in Latin America's largest country to increase the land devoted to sugarcane by 7% last year. The IBGE says the area planted with sugarcane went from 15.2 million acres in 2005 to 16.26 million acres in 2006. Brazilian ethanol makers produced 4.5 billion gallons last year and exported 900 million gallons. There has been a lot of talk in Congress about global warming, and many farmers and ranchers are wondering how global warming discussions could affect agriculture. Jonna Miller is with the American Farm Bureau Federation, and she has this report.
A new report from an international panel on climate change says that agriculture will feel the impact of global warming.
It came out with a mixed bag for agriculture. It shows that some areas of the world will show crop increases while other areas of the world may actually be harmed by global warming. And this is all under debate.
American Farm Bureau climate policy specialist Allison Specht says more research is needed. But with global warming all over the news and Democrats in control of Congress, it will also be a hot item on Capitol Hill.
Several of the legislative proposals actually include agriculture as offsets in carbon reducing policies. So farmers could be paid for storing carbon in their soil. They could also be paid for capturing methane from anaerobic digesters.
But Speck says agriculture needs to pay close attention to this issue because it could mean new regulations.
We believe that farmers should be able to participate in carbon markets as long as it's on a voluntary basis. We don't think that carbon regulation for agriculture should be mandated.
Jonna Miller, Washington.
McDonald's agreed Monday to pay a penny more per pound for its Florida-grown tomatoes to help boost wages for the migrant workers who harvest them, following a two-year campaign by an advocacy group that called for the increase. Under the agreement, a third party will verify that farm workers who pick McDonald's tomatoes will receive the money. Oak Brook, Illinois-based McDonald's will also require its suppliers to follow a workplace code of conduct that the workers will help create. And the Bush administration, under pressure from Congress to get tougher on trade, said on Monday it would take legal action against China for failing to stop widespread piracy and counterfeiting of American goods. U.S. Trade Representative Susan Schwab says the U.S. is filing two separate dispute settlement consultations against China with the World Trade Organization over pirated DVDs and CDs and trade barriers that make it difficult for the U.S. to offer legitimate movie, music, and book products. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your director of agricultural programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. There are a number of things you can do there, including downloading MP3 files of today's programming. You can sign up for podcasts of those programs if you'd prefer to have them delivered to your email or to your computer, rather, directly. And on the email side, you can subscribe to our weekend newsletter. And don't forget, there's a little tab up at the top of that page that says Pledge, should you happen to think that this programming is worth your while and you'd like to pledge a little financial support to the radio station. It's all right there at willag.org. Up next, we'll hear a conversation I had with the executive director of the Illinois Beef Association. Last week, I asked Marilee Johnson how the IBA membership viewed the Governor Rod Blagojevich initiative that would tax the gross receipts of corporations in the state.
We are very concerned as an industry and also as agriculture. As you know, we handle a lot of dollars. A lot of dollars go in our right pocket and a lot of dollars go out in our left pocket. So if you look at the gross, we have a lot of gross. But when you to stay in business, you have to look at the net. And those margins are very thin. In fact, we calculated on a feedlot. They're making about $1 a head. This will take them, the current proposal of the governor, down to about a $9 loss per head.
The governor, of course, has been making his way across the state in a bus, and he's saying that this will be good for taxpayers and the economy across the state. I take it you have an entirely different view of that.
We do have a different opinion because what it actually ends up doing is destroying the actual economic engine you need to generate revenue for the state. And no matter whether you meet that 2 million threshold that he's talking about, it is going to impact everybody because your suppliers who can raise their prices end up doing that. Consumers also end up taking the brunt of any increased costs along the chain. So we're very concerned that we could stay in business and then when we can, what prices are consumers willing to pay for goods and services.
Have you called on your membership to make calls to their representatives?
You bet we have. We have something on the website right now, IllinoisBeef.com, also giving them arguing points, having them look at their own operation and cash flow, how cost it out, how that would impact them. We've been to Springfield and talked to legislators there, and I think we just have to keep talking and making those contacts because everyone is very important.
The initial thought was that this was dead on arrival, that it wouldn't go anywhere. It's been a couple of weeks, and it still has life. Does that surprise you?
It does surprise me, and I would say in one way it also scares me. But as you know, we don't have specific details, and I think that's given them life because, one, we are speculating on how it might play out because we're very concerned about it. I think the governor is right now going around and trying to garner support for it, but it's a very difficult issue out there, and I would just encourage agriculture and other small businesses to stay engaged and make sure that they make their wishes and concerns known on this particular issue.
Is this an issue where the consumer might say, oh, a corporate tax is great, that's fine, go ahead and tax the son of a guns, and not recognize the detrimental impact on small businesses, even fairly large businesses in terms of some of the farm-related activities in the state?
That's definitely true because, you know, one, we're disengaged from agriculture, many consumers, and they don't stop and think about the business structures. Many of these business structures, though they might be corporate, are also passing in a family situation, passing that revenue on, and there are being taxes paid on that revenue. So I think the consumers have been misled a little, and they also, which is logical, have not stopped to see how it might impact. And even the small little businesses in their community, even if they don't meet that threshold, still their suppliers, who generally are larger suppliers operating on a thin margin because of high volume, are going to have to increase their cost to the small business. And so we all end up having to pay, and those extra costs sometimes mean the difference between staying in business and being out of business, which also impacts the schools and the communities around the state.
What it really means is that every time a corporation looks at paying a gross receipts, all of their inputs have the gross receipt on it. When they output, they have another gross receipt, and they continue to get taxed over and over and over on the same products as it changes hands potentially, so that you might make something new out of it, but that something new gets taxed again somewhere along the lines.
Exactly, and when you go from a good, which is about 1%, just a little under, to a service, which is about 2%, so I have feedlot owners that are actually raising some of their own cattle, and then if they custom feed any of those receipts, they pay 2% on. And a gross receipt has nothing to do whether you're making money or not. It has to do about just an amount of money that comes into your operation with no consideration for the large amount of money that goes out of your operation to pay bills.
That was the executive director of the Illinois Beef Association, Marilee Johnson. You can learn more about the IBEA's stance on the gross receipts tax by visiting illinoisbeef.org and see all the details from the proposal at www.illinois.gov/taxfairness. You'll want to click on the Q&A link on the illinois.gov/taxfairness site, and then scroll down to the gross receipts tax. Click on it, and you'll find the governor's page supporting the tax and answering some of the questions raised by Johnson and others. Well, speaking of the government, USDA yesterday released its latest crop progress report. It showed that compared to last year and the five-year rolling average, corn planting was lagging in the 18 primary states. The five-year average is 3% in the ground this year. The report simply states the figure is, well, not applicable. The wheat condition number was likely taken prior to any real cold weather for that particular report, so it may not reflect current conditions. Still, as of April the 8th, the crop progress report shows winter wheat in the good and excellent categories dropped by 7 percentage points from the previous week. Here now are the statisticians from Nebraska, Iowa, and Illinois to update conditions in their states.
This is Brad Schwab with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Illinois Field Office, reporting on crop progress and conditions for the week ending April 8th. Cold and damp weather slowed most farming operations last week. Statewide, the average temperature was over 8 degrees below normal. And with most areas of the state receiving from 1/4 to 1 inch of rainfall, it was no surprise that there were only an average of 1.4 days suitable for field work. Topsoil moisture was rated 1% short, 63% adequate, and 36% surplus. The surplus category showed a decline of 14 percentage points from last week, partially due to the high winds we've observed. Corn planting has begun, but only on a very limited basis. As of April 8th, less than 1% had been planted, and that compares to the five-year average of 3%. Oats planted is 15% complete compared to 34% last year and 48% for the five-year average. Soft red winter wheat condition was rated as fair to mostly good, as were pasture conditions. However, alfalfa condition did not fare as well and showed a decline at 13% poor, 41% fair, 42% good, and 4% excellent. Sub-freezing temperatures are to blame, and many producers are concerned the first cutting of alfalfa will be disappointing. On a similar note, the unseasonably warm temperatures we saw 2 weeks ago, which brought many fruit and vegetable crops to bloom, may lay victim to this week's near-record low temperatures with the potential of devastating production losses. Other activities last week included preparing equipment, applying fertilizer, and tending to livestock. This has been Brad Schwab with the Illinois Field Office of the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Joe Prusaki, State Director from USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service's Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending April 8, 2007. The statewide average precipitation was 0.44 inches, or a little more than one-half of the weekly normal of 0.8 inches. Soil temperatures as of Sunday, April 8th, were averaging only in the low 30s in the northwest to the low 40s in southeast Iowa. Temperatures for the week averaged from 9.6 degrees below normal at Dubuque in the Quad Cities to 13.7 degrees below normal at Sioux City and Spencer, and a statewide average of 11.8 degrees below normal. Although freezing temperatures hampered field work, the frozen fields did allow for the spreading of manure. Grain movement picked up with frost firming roadways. There were 0.8 days suitable for field work compared with 1.9 days last year at this time. Subsoil moisture rated 4% very short or short, 69% adequate, and 27% surplus. Topsoil moisture rated 1% very short or short, 63% adequate, and 36% surplus across Iowa. Oat seedings were 9% complete, below last year's and the five-year average of 17% and 40% respectively. No significant corn planting was reported in the state. A few reports of frost damage to alfalfa were noted. Fertilizer application at 57% was 3 percentage points below last year and the five-year average. Pasture range condition rated 21% very poor, 34% fair, and 45% good or excellent. This has been Joe Prusaki with USDA's Iowa Field Office reporting on the weekly crop weather report for the week ending April 8, 2007.
This is Steve Parn reporting Nebraska's weekly crop weather report for the week ending April 8, 2007. Cold temperatures and damp soils kept producers out of the field. Temperatures approached record lows over several nights late in the week, dropping soil temperatures as much as 10 degrees. For the week, temperatures averaged 14 degrees below normal across the state. Driest soil moisture conditions continue to be in Panhandle counties. Wheat conditions declined slightly from last week and rated 60% good or excellent, above last year's 54%. Wheat jointed was at 3%. Oats planted increased to 32%, ahead of last year's 25%, while 6% had emerged. Alfalfa conditions rated 42% good or excellent, well below last year's 71%. Sugar beet planting showed progress with 14% completed, ahead of last year's 7%. Pasture and range conditions rated 43% good or excellent, below last year's 60%. This has been Steve Parn of USDA's NAST, Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. Visit our website at willag.org. Well, in about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Don Day about the weather. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Hundreds of Collins and Aikman workers in Rantoul have received early warning notices that their factories could close. The so-called WARN notices are required within 60 days of an anticipated plant closing, laying off more than 50 workers, even if that closure doesn't happen. The auto parts maker is in bankruptcy protection and is trying to sell off its factories. It might have a buyer for the Rantoul plants in Michigan-based Cadence Innovation, but a spokesman won't discuss the implications of a possible sale. About 800 people work at Rantoul's three Collins and Aikman plants. A federal judge in Miami has rejected a motion by alleged al-Qaeda operative Jose Padilla to dismiss terrorism charges against him. His attorneys claim the former Chicago gang member was mistreated and tortured while in U.S. military custody as an enemy combatant. A trip to the African nation of Sudan has convinced Illinois Congressman Ray LaHood that the U.S. should offer more aid to the Darfur region. The Illinois Republican says the U.S. should work to end the starvation, displacement, and killing in that region. A state audit says the Illinois Department of Natural Resources improperly gave out permits to politically connected hunters in a process that wasn't advertised to the public. Auditor General William Holland reported that DNR issued 1,250 administrative permits for deer and turkey hunting in 2005 and 06. Many weren't issued with enough documentation and fees weren't collected on some. Hunters are supposed to get permits through a lottery before each hunting season. Holland says permits went to professional athletes, judges, politicians, and donors to the state's not-for-profit conservation foundation. Names of those getting permits weren't part of the audit and weren't immediately released. A DNR spokesman didn't immediately respond to requests for comment. It's the law in many cities. Property owners have to keep their sidewalks clear of snow. But in Champaign and Urbana, clean sidewalks are voluntary. Now both cities are considering making it mandatory, at least in some cases. Tonight, Champaign City Council members will discuss the issue nearly 2 months after a blizzard clogged some sidewalks for several days. Some lawmakers say a requirement may extend only to specific areas like U of I campus or downtown businesses. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to WILL in Urbana. We're joined on this Tuesday afternoon during the closing market report to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast by Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hi, Don.
Hello there.
Hey, you know, I see that we've got a winter storm watch in effect on April the 10th for Joe Davies, Stevenson, Carroll, and Whiteside counties in northwestern Illinois. And I believe that there's also some really heavy snow possibilities in the south central parts of Minnesota. Can this truly be the case?
It really is. And the thing is you may have to get used to this pattern for a while. Unseasonably cool and wet. We have not one, not two, but maybe as many as four significant areas of storminess that will move basically coast to coast across the USA over the next 2 weeks. And even though the severe cold that we endured over the Easter weekend has relaxed somewhat, it's really not going to warm up. In fact, temperatures of the next 10 days are still going to be averaging below normal. Silver lining is there's going to be some really good precipitation over the next 2 weeks across many areas of the United States, but it's going to come some areas in the form of heavy, wet snow. And this time of year, and on the southern end of the storms, we're going to have to watch out for severe weather. So it's going to be a very active next 2 weeks.
Where's the cold coming from that's carrying all of this?
Well, we can blame our neighbors up north, up in Canada and up in Alaska. There's still plenty of cold air to work with. And the way the pattern has unfolded, it's made it very easy, the way the jet stream is behaving, to allow pockets of cold air to slide in behind storms. And that's exactly what we're going to see now in areas of northwestern Illinois into Wisconsin and Minnesota over the next 24 hours.
Don't they know that pipeline's supposed to carry oil? All right. So it's going to be cold, it's going to be wet, and quite a little bit of precipitation. Probably be all right for the wheat crop, although it'll be cold. But it's going to stall a lot of planting in Nebraska, Iowa, and Illinois, those three big states, Minnesota as well, and
Indiana. It could be very wet in those areas over the next 2 weeks, so they're definitely looking at delays. And speaking of the wheat, I have talked to some wheat farmers out in western Kansas, and they're very concerned about what the weekend brought with those freezing temperatures, but they're not going to know for a while the outcome of that Easter cold snap.
Oh, so they don't know yet, then it's probably not as bad as many of them think, I'll bet, because if it got cold enough, it'd just be laid over, I would think, and be dead, and they'd know it by now, surely, wouldn't they?
Well, yeah, although wheat is can be interesting, and they may end up seeing some yield issues later on.
Indeed.
But for the first time in years, they have good moisture, then they're hit with a hard, hard freeze.
Yeah. Tell me about China and the potential for their planting season. Should have begun by now, but it's been delayed as well, I think.
They're not going to be as stormy as the United States, but their forecast is cooler than normal, and there will be some wet areas, especially in the central and the northern growing areas. So they will probably be facing some delays, as well as their April is pretty stormy as well, but nothing like what we're seeing going to see here in the U.S.
We've got some global stocks this morning that showed wheat was down in the numbers. I don't know that we have to build it, but we ought to check in on the Ukrainian wheat crop. How did it make it through the wintertime?
Well, they had a fairly mild winter out there, and they haven't been as susceptible to the hard freeze conditions over the last couple of weeks that we've seen here in the United States, like what we saw over Easter weekend. However, they are going to see some precipitation and some more stormy weather moving in the next week or two, so they're going to get some good moisture.
Don, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, joining us on this Tuesday afternoon during the closing market report. Don't forget, if you missed something or you just want to go back and listen to it, you can there at willag.org. That's willag.org. Have a great afternoon. Stay warm. Stay dry. I'm Todd Gleason.